full of his cramped writing. His face glowed with excitement.
Guess what? Miriam said we can stay here tonight.
Are you serious? Where?
Rowan turned like he expected a bed to appear on the bar. Miriam smiled, pushing her chair back.
Upstairs. We keep a few rooms to rent out, usually for the talent. Jared must have stayed in that main bedroom for an entire month. Which reminds me, he still owes me for that month. The gobshite. I think he can afford it now, don't you?
I'm going to give him a call.
Jared?
Rowan's mouth dropped open.
Lead singer Jared? He stayed here? And you have his number?
Of course I do. She shrugged lightly, looking at Ian. Let me know when your article is finished. If you'd like, I could forward it on to Jared.
You...
Ian choked on his own words, his face reverting to a deep vermilion.
I...
He gasped, and I whacked him on the back.
Ian, breathe.
Miriam raised her eyebrows at him.
Ian, you'll be okay. Once you've been in the business as long as I have, you figure out that musicians are just people. Interesting people, but people just the same.
She turned to me.
Speaking of interesting people, let's talk about you, Addie.
My face attempted a copycat of Ian's. Miriam's attention felt sparkly, and a little too heavy.
What about me?
She poked her finger at me.
I hear you are quite the mechanic. That's a talent. Maybe not one I can book, but a talent just the same. Ian said this trip wouldn't have worked without you.
Happiness bloomed in my chest.
Ian, you said that?
He shrugged, a hint of a smile on his face.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Rowan piped up.
If it weren't for Addie, we'd still be dragging our tailpipe across Ireland. She even saved us today. Right after Blarney, my car started overheating, and she managed to get us to the mechanic shop down the street.
Miriam sighed.
Let me guess, Connor Maloney's place? I hate to say it, but that man is as useless as a chocolate teapot.
She crossed her arms.
So, mechanic, what do you have to say for yourself?
What did I have to say for myself?
Cars are just something I enjoy.
And something that you're good at, she insisted.
I call her Maeve, Rowan said, because the first time I saw her she was tackling Ian in a parking lot. She's like a warrior queen.
Now I was really blushing. Sorry, why are we talking about this?
Because we need to. Miriam pumped her arm. We need more warrior queens around here, especially ones that own up to their power.
She leaned in, studying my embarrassed expression.
Addie, you know what I do, right? For work?
I nodded uncomfortably.
Yeah, you book talent.
Wrong.
She jabbed a finger at me, her voice rising into an enthusiastic crescendo.
I empower. I find people who are out there singing their songs, and I put a microphone in front of them and make sure the world is listening. And you know what? I want to do that for you, Addie.
What was she talking about?
Before I could figure it out, she leapt to her feet and wrapped her arm around mine, dragging me up to the stage.
Hey, Miriam, I don't sing or play anything. Or do stages. Unless it was on a field, I hated being in the spotlight. I desperately tried to wrench away, but she just yanked me up onto the platform, positioning me in front of a standing microphone. Ian and Rowan watched with wide eyes, but neither of them attempted to rescue me. Traitors.
Pat! The microphone! Miriam yelled.
One of the bartenders ducked under the bar, and suddenly the mic stand crackled to life. Miriam shoved it into my face.
Go on, Addie. Tell the nice people what you did.
I looked at her in horror.
True, the pub wasn't nearly as crowded as it had been earlier during the live performance, but there were still plenty of people, and every one of them looked up from their tables, amused smiles etched on their faces. They were clearly used to Miriam's antics.
"Go on," she insisted, giving me a nudge. "Tell the nice people your name and how badass you are. Making a declaration can be very powerful."
Do I really have to do this? Right as the thought entered my mind, her arm constricted around me like a boa. There was no way she was letting me off this stage. I cleared my throat.
Hello, everyone. My name is Addie Bennett.
Queen Maeve!
Ian shouted from the audience, his hands cupped around his mouth. I blushed straight down to my toes. Once this was over, I was going to murder him.
So, Miriam wants me to tell you that for the last couple of days, I've been on a road trip. Our car keeps breaking down, so I've been fixing it. And that's it.
I hastily shoved the microphone back toward Miriam's hands and attempted to dive off the stage, but she grabbed hold of the back of my shirt.
Wait just a minute, Addie. You know what I like to see? A woman who knows her strength. A woman who owns the fact that she is smart and creative. A woman who can get things done. Addie, you are a powerful woman.
She grabbed my hand and raised it over our heads, Victor style.
Go on, Addie. Say it.
I cringed.
Say what exactly?
Rowan and Ian grinned at each other. They were loving every minute of this.
Say, I am the hero of my own story.
I'm the hero of my own story, I said quickly.
No, 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 louder. Open up the diaphragm, really belt it out.
Was she not seeing the irony in forcing someone to declare how powerful they were? Just get this over with, I told myself. I took a deep breath and yelled right into the microphone.
I am the hero of my own story.
Yes, again, Miriam shouted.
This time, I really let loose.
I am the hero of my own story.
Good girl.
Miriam dropped my arm, her face glowing with perspiration. It actually did feel good to yell. It would probably feel even better if I believed it. So, that was weird, I managed, dragging my and Ian's suitcases over to the staircase. As soon as Miriam had dismissed me from the stage, Ian had jetted off, intent on seeing our rooms. Rowan grinned.
You stood on a stage and yelled to a bunch of strangers about what a hero you are. What's weird about that?
I attempted to slug him, but the suitcases made it impossible. Rowan grabbed one from me, shuffling it over to the stairs. I'm going to run over to the mechanic shop, make sure Connor can have our car ready by morning.
Can you believe Electric Picnic is tomorrow?
No, I couldn't believe it. Had the past few days dragged or flown? I'll stay here. It's probably better if Connor and I don't see each other again. He flashed me a smile.
Too bad. I was hoping to see Hero Maeve in action.
Ha ha. I followed Ian up the stairs, the weight of the suitcases sending me bumping back and forth between the walls. Finally, I made it to the top, dropping everything into a heap.
I can't believe this.
I followed Ian's voice through the doorway. The room's ceiling was slanted, and two twin beds crowded the far wall, the fading light streaming in from a single octagon-shaped window. Ian was writhing around on the nearest bed.
Which bed do you think Jared slept in? This one?
I have no idea, I said, averting my eyes. Ian's dedication to title track bordered on embarrassing. I fled for the next room, taking way longer than was necessary to set up my suitcase next to the bed. Olive's text was burning a hole in my pocket. I had to talk to Ian. Now. When I walked back in, Ian had switched to the other bed, his arms tucked under his head, a peaceful smile on his face. Was I really going to do this?
I am the hero, I thought ruefully.
Thanks for getting us here, Ian said before I could open my mouth.
It really means a lot.
Oh, sure, I said, lowering myself onto the other bed.
So, Ian, there's something I need to talk to you about.
Me too.
He rolled onto his stomach, reaching for his notebook.
I wanted to tell you that you should tell Mom about Cubby as soon as you possibly can. Maybe even before we get home. If you want, I could distract Archie and Walter at the airport while you tell her.
What? I felt the bridge between us collapse in one fell swoop. Now he wasn't just insisting that I tell her, but he was dictating the time and place, too. He sat up.
I think you should tell Mom about Cubby before...
Ian, I heard you, I said, falling against the closet door behind me. But I'm not ready to tell Mom yet. Not that soon.
He slammed his notebook shut.
But you said I was right about telling Mom, when we were at Torque Manor.
I said maybe you were right.
I never said I was going to do it for sure.
Ian jumped to his feet and began pacing furiously.
You have got to be kidding me, Addie, why not?
Because I'm not ready. If I want to tell Mom, I'll tell Mom.
And even though I knew it would cause an explosion, I couldn't help but add the last part.
And besides, what happened with Cubby is none of your business.
None of my business?
He stopped in place, his eyes shining angrily.
Addie, I would be thrilled if that were actually the case, but we both know it isn't true. It became my business the second I walked into the locker room.
My throat tightened. The locker room. Anytime I tried to conjure up the scene of Ian walking in, of my brother being the one to stop Cubby, my brain grabbed a thick set of curtains and slid them shut.
How was I supposed to know Cubby would do that?
My mouth was dry.
He pointed at me.
Because I warned you about him. I told you he was bad news. It was the same fight we'd been having all summer. It made me feel tired, right down to my bones.
Addie, for once, just listen to me. You can't keep this a secret anymore. You have to tell Mom the first chance you get.
Stop telling me what to do!
I exploded, my heart hammering in my chest. And who are you to talk about secrets, Indy Ian?
I spat the name off my tongue, and his eyes hardened.
Don't turn this on me.
Why not?
I opened my arms out wide, encompassing the room. Secret Irish friend? Secret writing career? Secret college plans?
I needed to pause, reel it in, but I was too angry. I reached into my pocket and then thrust my phone in his face.
And this? What is this about?
He yanked the phone from my hands, his posture deflating as he read Olive's text.
How does she know? He said quietly.
His words stopped me in my tracks, sending my brain spiraling.
Wait, are you saying it's true? You got kicked off the team? Why didn't you tell me?
He tossed the phone onto the bed.
It was because of you, okay? I'm off the team because of you.
No. I backed out of the room, my hands shaking as a mountain formed in my chest, heavy and brand new. Now his voice was pleading.
Addie, I got kicked off the football team. Mom and Dad don't know yet, but I can't keep it a secret forever.
You have to tell Mom. You have to tell her about the photo and about Cubby passing it.
Ian, stop!
I yelled, clamping my hands over my ears. My body spun around and suddenly I was running, the steps rising up to meet me, Ian at my back.
I made it all the way down to the harbor before I slowed. My chest was heaving, the tears making it hard to breathe, and I fell heavily onto an iron bench, the cold slats pressing into my spine. Here's the thing that shouldn't have happened this summer. Not to me. Not to anyone. After weeks of Cubby asking, I'd sent him a topless photo of myself. I hadn't felt completely okay about it because, one, all his joking about it had started to feel uncomfortably like pressure. And two, no matter how many times I swatted at Ian's warning, it refused to stop buzzing in my head. I hear how he talks about girls. You don't want to hang out with him. But Cubby and I had been together all summer. Didn't that mean I knew him better than Ian did? Didn't that mean I could trust him? And besides, maybe this was how you went from secret late-night meetups to walking down the halls of your high school together. You took a leap of faith. So I'd hit send. Even though my hands were shaking, even though the buzzing in my head got even louder. And then, 2 days later, Ian had come home from football camp and all but thrown himself through my bedroom door, angry tears pooling in his eyes. You know what he's been doing, right? He's been showing everyone your photo. Why didn't you listen to me? I'd been too stunned to even ask what happened next. But now I knew. After Ian walked in on Cubby passing my photo around to the entire varsity team, he'd fought him. Of course he had. And then he'd gotten kicked off the football team. And the fact that I hadn't meant to involve my brother, hadn't meant to let my life spill over into his, didn't matter, because that came with being family. Whether you wanted them to or not, your actions always affected the entire unit. I took a deep, shuddery breath. I needed to tell Ian why I hadn't listened to him. The real reason. He deserved to know. A few seconds later, I heard his footsteps behind me, just like I knew I would. "Addie," he started, but I whipped around, forcing the words out before they could retreat. "Ian, do you know how hard it is to be your little sister?" He froze, a searching expression moving over his face. "What do you mean? This summer excluded, I've always felt like we had a great friendship."
"We have."
I shook my head, groping for the words as he slid onto the bench next to me. "What I mean is, do you know how hard it is to be Ian Bennett's sister?" He shook his head almost imperceptibly.
"I don't understand."
"You're the star of our high school, star of the football team, star athlete in a house filled with star athletes."
My voice wavered, and I picked a spot in the ocean to stare at, steadying my gaze.
"You're good at school, at sports, at writing. And of course you were right about Cubby.
You were completely right. And deep down I knew it all along." Ian dug his hands into his hair, his face confused.
"Then why?"
I cut him off again. I really needed him to listen.
"Ian, I was with Cubby this summer because I wanted someone to see me. Really see me, not just in comparison to you three."
I took a deep breath. "I wanted to be someone other than Bennett number 4, the one who's just mediocre."
"Mediocre?"
Ian's eyes widened in disbelief.
"Why didn't you ever tell me you felt that way?"
"Why should I have to tell you? It's so embarrassingly obvious." A bird hopped happily over, a French fry clamped in its beak.
"And Ian, I'm really sorry that I sent the photo, but..."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa, back up." Ian's hands shot into the air. "You think I'm mad at you because you sent the photo?" He looked at me square in the eye, his knee bouncing. "Addie, that's not what this is about. Sending a photo was your decision. It's your... body." We both grimaced. This was firmly out of the realm of brother-sister conversations. At least it was for us.
Sorry, he said quickly, blush forming on his cheeks. I don't know if I'm saying this the right way, but what I mean is that I wasn't mad that you sent the photo. Your picture getting passed around the team wasn't your fault. Cubby's the one who did that. He kicked at a loose pebble on the sidewalk. I was mad that you didn't trust me when I told you to stay away from him. I've been around Cubby for years. I've seen how he's changed, and I just wanted to protect you. Tears prickled my eyes, and I leaned over, resting my elbows on my knees. The knot in my chest felt like it would never unravel. Ian, I'm so sorry about football, I whispered. He exhaled slowly. Okay, now it's my turn to come clean on something else. I didn't mean what I said back there in the room. I was just angry and trying to make a point.
I shot up quickly. You mean you're still on the team?
He shook his head. No, I am 100% off the team. What I mean is, that's on me, not you.
So it wasn't about the photo?
Well, he hesitated. I wouldn't say that exactly. But more happened than just me confronting Cubby in the locker room. I mean, I definitely lost it that day. But it was all the other fights that put things over the edge.
Fights? My head snapped up. As in plural? How many did you get into?
He hesitated. I'm not really sure. And I'll be honest, at first they were about you. Guys making stupid comments to get under my skin. But then it was like I just snapped. I couldn't handle my teammates anymore and everything set me off. Coach kept giving me warnings and then...
He straightened up, throwing his shoulders back. But it's okay that I got kicked off because I hate football. Always have. Always will. What?
I ripped my gaze from the ocean.
Enjoying writing more than football was not the same thing as hating football. And he couldn't hate it, could he? Not when he was so talented. Like you hate practice, or...
He shook his head, sending hair into his face. No, I hate football. All of it.
His eyes met mine.
I hate practice, I hate games, the pep rallies, the banquets, the uniforms. I hate how people treat me differently. Like I'm special just because I'm good at this one thing. And it's been this way for so long. Once everyone figured out I was good, it was like someone threw this big football blanket over me. No one could see anything else. Everyone just wanted me to fall into this stereotype and it just never... fit.
I had never even considered that Ian didn't like football. Suddenly it all fell into place. The rush out of practices, the grumpiness before games. How hard he worked not to talk about football when it was all anyone else wanted to talk about. It had been right in front of me all along.
Ian, I had no idea. That must have been...
Awful, he said, his eyebrows dropping.
Awful.
I repeated.
Why didn't you tell me?
He shook his head. I didn't want to disappoint you. Everyone gets so excited about me playing, and you were always at my games and... He exhaled loudly. I want to be like you and Archie and Walter. When you're on the field, it's like you turn into who you really are. You have so much fun. I've never felt that.
But you feel that way with writing and title track, I said.
Exactly, he said. That's why this trip was so important to me. I thought that if I could maybe write something really incredible, maybe get it accepted into a large magazine, Mom and Dad would be less upset about my quitting football.
I pressed my lips together, barely containing my smile.
So you're saying that you have something you need to tell Mom and Dad?
He groaned, but a smile pierced his face too. I know. Don't bug me about it, okay? I'm getting there.
Are you kidding me? I am definitely going to bug you about it, at least as often as you bugged me. There you guys are!
Rowan suddenly appeared next to the bench, startling us.
I had no idea where you went. I ended up asking one of the bartenders, and he told me...
He stopped, his eyes drawn to my tear-stained cheeks.
Wait, what's wrong? Did something happen?
You could say that.
Rowan had the guidebook in his hand, and seeing it sparked an idea.
Hey, Ian, do you want to do the Cove homework with us?
I actually think it might help you.
Good idea, Rowan said.
I bet you'll like this one.
Ian yanked his hair back, securing it with an elastic from his wrist.
I don't know, do I have to talk to a tree or kiss something?
I shook my head.
We're supposed to draw something that didn't work out the way we hoped it would. Then we're going to fold our papers into boats and send them out to sea.
Ian said. But from the way his eyes landed on the book, I knew he was interested.
I was looking for you because I wanted to do the homework before it gets dark. I even asked for paper back at the pub, but all they had were these.
Rowan handed me a stack of old flyers, advertising a show by a local violinist.
Good enough for me.
I handed them each a paper, and then we spread out, sitting on the ground with our drawings in front of us. Mine came easily. It was Cubby and me, walking down the hallway, his arms slung around me, admiring whispers coming from all directions.
The drawing itself was terrible, barely a level above stick figure, but getting it all out shifted something inside.
Again, the pain was still there, but some of the weight traveled down through my pencil, solidified into something I could look at, something I could let go of.
We gathered at the edge of the water, following guidebook lady's instructions for the anti-love boat. And as I set my boat into the water, I let myself imagine for one more second what it would be like if things had gone differently. If Cubby had cared about me the way I'd cared about him. And then I let it go, watching as the waves carried it out to be dissolved by salt. And when it was gone, Ian and Rowan were still beside me. Solid. It meant more to me than I'd thought it would.
There was a storm in the night, a gentle pattering that infiltrated my dreams and infused the late morning sky with a bright, peachy hue. Before getting out of bed, I rolled onto my back and stared up at the spiderweb cracks in the ceiling, testing out my new feeling of lightness. The knot was still in my chest, but Ian and I being on the same team made everything seem easier. I got dressed and then wandered into the boys' room to see them sprawled out on their beds. Rowan wearing a pink t-shirt depicting a cat riding an orca, and Ian poring over his map. I pointed to Rowan's shirt.
How many of those do you have?
Not nearly enough. And good morning to you too, he said, his dimple making me smile.
I pointed to Ian's map. One more stop before electric picnic?
He grinned, bouncing off the bed.
Rock of Cashel. I can't believe the concert is tonight.
I can't believe Lena will be here tonight. I was still nervous, but now that the tension had eased between Ian and me, telling Lena suddenly felt much more doable.
Rowan lifted his phone.
Connor says we can pick up the car after 10. Anyone want to stop for breakfast first?
Me. Ian and I said in unison. Miriam had left bright and early to drive to Dublin for a meeting, so after saying goodbye to the staff, we rolled our suitcases down to Main Street, stopping at a cobalt blue coffee shop with Birdies, free tea with every order spelled out across the window in gold stick-on letters. Inside, a small bell jingled overhead, and we ordered eggs and toast from a woman standing behind the counter. I wanted to watch the ocean for as long as possible, so while we waited for our toast and eggs, I chose a table near the window, wrapping my hands around my hot mug of mint tea. Outside, tourists streamed past us on the sidewalk, and I watched them absent-mindedly, spooning sugar into my cup
and tuning out Rowan and Ian's conversation to think about Lena. I hadn't seen her in more than 3 months. What was tonight going to be like? Would we just pick up where we left off? Would we have to get used to each other again? Our server had just set our plates in front of us when suddenly one of the passers-by snapped me out of my peppermint-infused daze. He was tall, with wide shoulders, a massive pair of headphones, and an undeniable swagger that reminded me of...
Walter!
I squeaked. He glanced in the window and stopped dead, his gaze on Ian.
No!
Ian dropped his spoon into his mug, sending hot water splattering. My instinct was to dive under the booth, but Walter's glare traveled from Ian straight down to me, and suddenly we were making eye contact. Furious eye contact.
Is this seriously happening again? Rowan groaned. This island is way too small. Who is he?
Our server asked, holding a pitcher of water in her hand. Walter pressed his face to the window, his breath steaming up the glass.
Is he dangerous?
Moderately, I muttered, jumping to my feet. Walter pushed his headphones off and marched for the door, his lips already moving in an angry diatribe that we were privileged to be a part of the second he opened the door.
Two are the worst, he yelled. Here I am, doing my best to forget that Addie appeared out of nowhere at Blarney Castle, and now you're here eating breakfast!
He roared eating breakfast like it was at the top of a list of offenses people could commit against him. Secrets did not look good on Walt.
Sir, calm down, the server ordered, wielding her serving tray like a shield. Can I interest you in a nice cup of tea? Maybe one of our soothing flavors. Chamomile? Lemon lavender? It's on the house?
He's not a big tea drinker, but thanks, I said politely. Walt, stay calm, Ian commanded, edging away from the window. Where's Mom? Walt yanked his headphones away from around his neck.
What are you even doing here?
I gestured to Ian. Rowan and I told you back at Blarney Castle. We're working on Ian's paper. He shook his head disgustedly.
B.S. I talked to Archie about it, and he thought it sounded made up, too. You don't need to go to a foreign country to do research for an admissions essay, which makes you a liar, he said, thrusting his finger at Rowan. Do you even wear John Varvatos' cologne?
Rowan grimaced slightly but said nothing.
You told Archie?
Ian demanded, bouncing to his feet. His map was on the table and he quickly shuffled it aside. Walter scowled.
Of course I did. I had to tell someone.
I shot a nervous look out the window. He hadn't answered Ian's question.
Where's Mom? I repeated. At the cathedral. I talked her into letting me skip it.
The cathedral was only 2 blocks away. How close had we come to running into them?
Walt lasered in on Ian. Now, for the last time, what are you doing in Ireland?
The server cowered at his tone, and I gazed longingly at my plate of fluffy eggs. Breakfast was not going to happen, and Walt wasn't going to believe any more of our lies. Time to come clean.
Ian, just tell him.
I sighed. Ian grabbed a wad of napkins and mopped up the splattered tea.
We're going to a music festival called Electric Picnic to see my favorite band Title Track do their final show. I'd planned it all along. Addie intercepted me on the way out, so that's why she's here too.
Walt's eyebrows shot to the ceiling.
I knew it! I knew you were lying! So that makes international mentor here.
Ian's friend, Rowan piped up, and fellow Title Track fan, and I actually do wear John Varvatos. The Artisan Aqua scent is my favorite.
Walt eyed him critically. He had to quit taking his scent so seriously. Ian started again.
Walt, this is the plan.
After the festival, we're going to meet you in Dublin and fly. Just stop.
Walter threw his arms up and backed quickly toward the door.
Don't tell me any more. Just be safe and stop running into us.
Deal, I said eagerly.
You guys obviously aren't sticking to the itinerary, Ian pressed. Where are you going next?
I don't know, some rock place?
Rock of Cashel? Ian slammed his fist onto the table. But that's where we're going.
Rowan shook his head.
It's a really common tourist spot. I'm not surprised.
Well, you're not going there anymore,
Walt said, his Adam's apple protruding.
Because if you guys show up there, it's over. I'm barely keeping it together as is.
Walt, please.
I pressed my hands into a prayer.
You have to keep it together. I can't get kicked off the soccer team. Just don't tell anyone else.
Out of all the siblings, Walt and I were the ones who loved sports the most. He had to understand.
What do you think I've been doing since Blarney Castle? I'm trying to help you guys out.
He stumbled over to the door, looking out at the street before pushing it open.
They'll be at the cathedral for maybe 20 more minutes. You'd better get out of here. Fast.
He shot out onto the sidewalk, the door slamming behind him.
Now what do we do? I asked, edging away from the window.
Well, we're not going to Rock of Cashel.
Ian's face fell in disappointment.
That was going to be a huge part of my article.
Rowan pushed his glasses up his nose.
Actually, I might have a place better than Rock of Cashel. It's a little bit of a detour, but it's close to Stradbally.
And if the rumors are true, this place may have something to do with Title Track.
Really? What is it? I asked.
He smiled at me.
It's a secret.
Secret Fairy Ring. I'm not exaggerating when I say secret, pet. This next stop is pure off-the-beaten-path gold, an experience that you can stash in your carry-on and pull out when the Jerkin 23A starts bragging about all the under-the-radar local places he visited on his trip. Not that you asked. In general, I'm all for the wander-till-you-find-it method of travel, but in this case, winging it just isn't going to cut it. Not when there's magic involved. Follow the map I've included on the next page to a T, then meet back here.
You make it?
I knew you would. Such a capable duck.
Now, before you start slogging your way through that unassuming clump of trees on the east side of the road, I'm going to lay out a few ground rules. Fairy Etiquette 101. And I don't want to sound too dramatic, but your compliance or failure to follow these rules may alter your entire destiny. So, you know, comply.
Rule number one. Tread carefully. Fairies need a place to dance their fairy dances and hold their fairy tea parties. And if they're Irish fairies, well then, they also need a place to plot the certain demise of anyone who has ever so much as looked at them cross-eyed. Which leads me to my next rule. Rule number two. Don't make the fairies mad. Irish fairies have the reputation of being just the teensiest bit vindictive. Like steal your baby, burn your barn down vindictive. Irish fairies don't mess around, and you shouldn't either. Speak gently. Don't tread on the flowers, and do your best to entertain only the kindest of thoughts. Rule number three. Leave the fairies a gift. I would suggest something tiny as well as either beautiful or delicious. Coins, honey, thimbles, fish tacos, your neighbor's firstborn, all excellent choices. Rule number four. Make a wish. Showing up to a fairy's home and not making a wish is like showing up to a junior high dance and refusing to do the electric slide. Not only is it unprecedented, but it's also rude. Also,
be aware that real-life fairies act less as dream granters and more as dream guiders, helping you to figure out what it is your heart truly wants, and then nudging you all along the way toward it. So, listen closely, pet. You may hear something that surprises you. Heartache homework. Fill in your wish here. I promise not to look. Excerpt from Ireland for the Heartbroken, An Unconventional Guide to the Emerald Isle, 3rd edition. Clover's engine was cool as a mint julep, her tailpipe reattached with something a bit more trustworthy than a hanger. We'd sprinted for the mechanic shop, pooled our money to pay for the repairs, then torn out of Cove like mobsters on a bootleg run. We'd been in such a rush that I'd even skipped the "I told you it was the radiator" gloat speech I'd mentally prepared for Connor. After Walt run-in number 2, it was becoming increasingly clear that Mom finding out was much less of a question of if, but when. I held tight to my final sliver of hope. Maybe he wouldn't tell. But Walt had been on the verge of spontaneous combustion. Anyone could see that. Every time a vehicle pulled onto the road behind us, I spun around, expecting to see Aunt Mel's tour bus bearing down on us, my infuriated Mom in the driver's seat. "Do you think Mom knows by now?" I asked, watching the trees whoosh by. "What about now?"
"Addie," Ian groaned, but a smile hovered just under the tension in his voice. Sometimes joking was the only way to make it through, particularly when you were about to get caught for sneaking away on a European road trip and in the process lose the thing you cared about the most. I glanced up at Ian's tangled hair. Well, maybe soccer didn't matter the most. But the fact remained, we'd begun the trip with the express hope that our parents would never find out, and now we were hoping to make it just a few more hours so we could go to the concert. My, how the mighty had fallen. It helped that Lena and Titletrack were already pinpoints of light on the road ahead. My stomach twisted in anticipation. "I still say Walter isn't going to tell on you," Rowan offered. He was driving a solid 20 kilometers over the speed limit, cutting straight through turns, but now that we were on day 3, I didn't even bat an eye. He was actually a very alert driver, and the safe feelings I had around him transferred to being in his car. Ian, on the other hand, was channeling his inner Kermit the Frog, his face a dusky green. I gestured to Ian. "Better ease up. This one isn't looking good."
"I'm fine," Ian insisted. But then, in a rare moment of honesty, he backtracked. "Nope, you're right. Not fine." He glanced over at Rowan. "I still don't get what this guidebook stop has to do with Titletrack."
Rowan beamed. "You'll see." Whatever the connection, he was very proud of himself over it. Sunlight kept blasting on and off and through our windows, and every time it hit his face, a constellation of freckles lit up on the bridge of his nose. It was oddly mesmerizing. Finding the fairy ring was not a terribly straightforward process. Instead of regular directions, Guidebook Lady's map used landmarks like "Rock that looks like David Bowie in 1998, and "Barn the Color of Sin" to guide us. We had to circle around the road a few times and Google David Bowie just to get within striking distance. Finally, we pulled over, crossing the road to a clump of trees that looked incredibly unpromising. By this point, Ian was a bundle of nerves. Pukey nerves. Hopefully all the U-turns would be worth it.
"What is a fairy ring, anyway?" Ian asked, stepping off the road and into the mud.
"Fairy rings are actually ring forts," Rowan said. "They're the remains of medieval farms. People used to dig moats and then use the earth to make circular barriers. Their remains are all over Ireland, but for a long time people didn't know what they were, so they came up with magical explanations." I didn't need any more convincing. "Let's go." I marched for the forest like I knew what I was doing. I hesitated for a moment before plunging into the mud. It had the consistency of extra sloppy peanut butter.
My Converse were not going to survive this trip.
Ian groaned, sludging his way forward. Rowan slogged up next to me.
You know what we're looking for, right? It's a raised circular wall, either made of stone or...
like that?
I pointed to a rounded bank draped with patches of grass and moss, and we all hurried over. But finding the fairy ring and getting into the fairy ring were two very different situations. The bank was about 5 feet tall and reminded me of a vertical slip and slide.
How should we...
Rowan started, but Ian charged up behind us, summiting the ledge in 4 big steps.
I guess like that.
Whoa, what is this place?
Ian shouted once he'd made it over the bank.
Ian, no yelling,
I said, breaking my own rule.
You'll make the fairies mad.
You think I'm scared of fairies when Mom is out there?
He hesitated, his voice settling reverently.
Seriously, though, what is this place?
Rowan and I exchanged a look, then hauled ourselves up as quickly as possible. But as usual, Ian had made it look easier than it actually was. I fell backward twice, both times losing my balance and tumbling into the mud.
Need a little help, Maeve?
I glanced up to see Rowan biting his cheeks.
Are you laughing?
I demanded. No way, I'm much too scared of you for that. I was just standing here wondering if I've ever seen anyone fail so badly at climbing a 5-foot hill.
It's my shoes. I'm supposed to be riding around Italy on a scooter, not hiking through mud.
I attacked the hill again, this time allowing Rowan to help haul me up. Once I had my balance, I leaned in close.
Okay, tell me the truth. Is this really a tidal track site, or were you just trying to ease Ian's devastation?
It really is.
Rowan was one of those rare people who was even cuter up close. His gray eyes were flecked with blue, and a constellation of freckles danced across his nose, lit up by the sun.
Guys, look at this!
I tore my gaze from Rowan, instantly forgetting about the freckles. All around us, tall, beautiful trees echoed the circle, their branches reaching over to form a protective umbrella over the ring. But it was the light that got me. Sunlight had to filter through so many layers of leaves that by the time it reached the ring, it cast a warm, lucky glow. If fairies lived anywhere, it had to be here. Without breaking the silence, Rowan and I slipped carefully down the bank and into the ring. At ground level, everything was a notch or two quieter, the wind moving silkily through the grass. Small, shiny trinkets covered a gray stump in the circle's center. 3 gold thimbles, a silver lighter, 2 pearl-inlaid bobby pins, and a lot of coins.
Wow,
Rowan whispered quietly. He reached into his pocket, coming up with a handful of coins and a foil-wrapped stick of gum.
Real-life fairies act less as dream granters and more as dream guiders, helping you to figure out what it is your heart truly wants, and then nudging you all along the way toward it. So listen closely, pet. You may hear something that surprises you.
I shuffled through my pocket, emerging with a handful of coins left over from paying for our spilled eggs at the coffee shop. I handed one to Ian.
We have to make wishes, and then place these on the stump as an offering.
Just like Jared did, Rowan said triumphantly.
Ian's eyes grew wide, and not because Rowan's voice was over the fairy-approved decibels.
Jared came here?
Rowan nodded, finally letting his smile break loose.
This morning I was reading more about Tidal Track's early days, and I came across this old interview where Jared told a story about stopping at a fairy ring near Cove.
He was actually on his way to Kinsale, which is farther south, but he happened to stop at O'Bohair for lunch, and he met Miriam. I bounced happily on my feet.
He stopped to make a wish, and the rest is history. You really think this is the fairy ring he stopped at?
Rowan shrugged. I can't really know, but he said it was close to Cove, and this is pretty much the only main road from Dublin,
And here's the part I really liked about the story. Instead of wishing to become a famous musician, he said he asked the fairies for the next thing he needed. A few hours later, he met Miriam, and then the rest was history.
"Rowan, this is perfect!" Ian yelled,
disregarding the fairy's delicate ears. He pointed to the stump.
"This is the real beginning of title track, right here!"
Rowan splayed his arms out proudly.
"Didn't I say I'd deliver?"
I squeezed his arm.
"Nice work, Rowan."
"All right then, time for wishes," Ian announced. "If it worked for Jared, it'll work for us. Rowan, you found this place, so you go first."
Rowan strode over to the stump and carefully placed his gum next to a bobby pin. As he set it down, something about his posture changed. Opened up. There was a long, quiet pause, and when he spoke, his voice was quiet and clear.
"I wish my mom and dad would let go of each other."
I suddenly felt like a trespasser, stumbling upon a private moment. Ian and I exchanged a quick glance. Did Rowan need a moment alone? I began edging backward, but Rowan's voice held me in place.
"My entire life they've always fought."
He turned back toward us, his face even. "Bad fights, even in public. Once we were out to dinner and their fighting got so bad that someone called the guards." He shuddered lightly. "I was so relieved on New Year's when they told me they were getting a divorce, because I thought, finally, it's over."
"But it isn't over. They don't live in the same house anymore, but in some ways they're just as connected to each other by anger as they were by marriage. And now I'm always in the middle. I can't get away from it."
He gestured toward the car. "They want me to choose who to live with for the school year. That's why all my stuff is packed into Clover. I still don't know which one. Both places sound miserable."
My heart thickened. "Rowan," I started.
But I didn't know where to go from there. Sunlight spilled over him, highlighting all the layers of his sadness. I'd never thought of connection that way. That hatred could be just as binding as love. My chest ached for him.
"I'm so sorry," Ian said. "I didn't know you were going through all this. I would have tried to help."
"You did help.
You just didn't know it."
Rowan dug the toe of his sneaker into the ground. "I needed someone who knew me outside of my family context. And I'm sorry I kept harping on you guys about your arguing. It just kept triggering me. And I know your mom can be hard on you. But you look out for each other. And I can tell your family is the real deal." He looked up, his eyes open and vulnerable. "I just wish I had what you have."
My feet carried me to him, my arms slipping around his back. "Rowan, you do have us. We're here with you, and we'll be here as long as you need us."
Ian flanked his other side, the three of us looking down at the stump. I carefully set a coin down. "My wish is for Rowan," I said, measuring my words. "I wish that Rowan will be happy, and that he'll know he's not alone."
"Me too," Ian said, setting his coin next to mine. "My wish is for Rowan."
Rowan didn't thank us. He didn't have to. Over the past 3 ridiculous days, Rowan had been carrying us, holding steady through our fights and bitter remarks. This was about thanking him. Finally, Rowan broke the silence.
"I think that helped. Anyone feel like going to Electric Picnic?"
"I guess," I said nonchalantly, and Ian grinned. "I don't really have any other plans." We were exiting the muddy bank when my phone chimed. Ian stiffened.
"Oh no. Did Walt spill?"
I lifted the screen to my face. It was Olive.
"Addie, are you okay? Now everyone is talking about Cubby and a photo of you."
"No." I froze, willing the letters to rearrange, willing the message to mean something other than what it meant.
My breath turned shallow. My hands clammy.
Olive's everyone was bigger than most people's. She was one of those rare people who managed to fit in with every social group on the high school spectrum. As comfortable with the other soccer players as she was the debate team. If she said everyone, she meant everyone.
Ian's face flushed as he studied my expression.
Addy, what? Is it Mom?
I managed to hand him the phone, and his face tightened as he read the text.
Oh, no.
I cried for a solid 25 minutes. The tears just wouldn't stop coming. Rowan and Ian took turns giving me concerned looks, but I could barely register them. Everyone knew. Everyone. Worse, what if everyone had seen?
Ian and Rowan kept trying to ask me if I was okay, but I was inside a bubble, completely separate from them. Finally, Ian put his energy into texting one of his teammates.
My coach found out, Addy, he said nervously. He was looking at me like I was something brittle, breakable.
Did he not realize I was already shattered?
How?
My voice didn't sound like mine.
I don't know how. I didn't tell him. Not even when he cornered Cubby and me about what the fight was about. But now he's found out and...
And what? My throat felt stuffed full of cotton. I couldn't even swallow.
Ian's knee ricocheted off the seat.
And there's talk that Cubby will be suspended from the team. Maybe more. It's still just rumors, but I think that's how this thing got out.
This thing. This thing that was me. And my heart and my body all on display for anyone to throw rocks at. How big was it going to get? How long until Mom found out? Dad?
I huddled in the corner of Clover, so miserable that my tears dried up. Both Ian and Rowan tried consoling me, but it was no use.
I could already hear the whispers in the hallways, feel the glances of boys who'd seen more of me than I'd ever show them. Teachers would know. My coaches would know. I wanted to throw up. Especially when my phone started dinging with messages from my teammates, some concerned, some just curious. Did that really happen?
Finally, I silenced my phone and stuffed it under Rowan's pile.
What else could I do? The closer we got to Strad Valley, the tighter my body crunched into a ball. I knew we were just about there when traffic turned bumper to bumper, and small white arrows directed us to a dirt road lit with fairy lights. We filed slowly onto the fairgrounds in a long parade of cars, people yelling to one another, and music pumping loudly from every car stereo. It reminded me of the high school parking lot every morning before the first bell rang. Home suddenly pressed in on me so tightly that I could barely breathe.
We made it, Rowan said, meeting my eyes. His enthusiasm was a solid 98% lower than it should have been. Even Ian looked docile, his body remarkably still. Ian glanced back at me and then pointed to an open field blooming with makeshift shelters, tents, caravans, teepees, all crammed together like one giant circus.
Pretty cool, right?
He asked, his voice soft.
And think, Lena will be here soon. It will all be better then.
Or worse, I silently added, my stomach twisting. Just a couple of hours ago I'd felt good about telling Lena, but hearing from everyone back home had changed that. Names of the designated camping sites glinted in the dimming sunlight. They were all accompanied by cartoon drawings of famous people. Oscar Wilde, Janis Joplin, Andy Warhol, and Jimi Hendrix. A man with a bright red vest ushered us into our parking spot, and Ian sprang out, stretching his arms.
I can't believe we're finally here.
It does seem like it took us a lot longer than 3 days to get here, Rowan added.
That I had to agree with. The Rainbow's End Hostel and Inch Beach felt like a lifetime ago. I climbed out too, and numbly followed the guys to the will call booth to pick up my ticket. Inside the gates, my first thought was chaos. The grounds were packed to the brim. People walked.